Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, that sounds about right. Middle of the week, middle of the month. You know what I love about Wednesday in the National Football League? I think it's the day of turn. I think it's the day where you get the last, in this case, stink out of your system and begin to look forward to what is next. It's totally different from the world of college football, at least traditionally speaking, where if you lose early, you're done. Times have changed in college football, as we know, and that applies right now for such powerhouses like Clemson and Ohio State. They can still make their way back into the tourney if they win out, if they win their conference championship game. In the NFL, man, it doesn't matter what you do. Look at last year. Buccaneers started with a loss. Hell, they were 7-5 through 12 weeks. And there were all sorts of questions about what was going on with that organization. That applies here now with the Jaguars. They couldn't have started any worse. And will things begin to shift here in a positive direction? I wish I had an answer for you. Today we heard from Urban Meyer. He wasted very little time. It was the first question that was asked to him about the University of Southern California. He said, no chance. He says he is here and he is committed to building this organization. As far as I am concerned, it's over. And I even thought it was a non-story yesterday. I know it picked up a tremendous amount of, space, a tremendous amount of press. I think it was more national than local. I understand knee-jerk reaction. Hell, I'm one of yous. And in the world now of immediacy, we're so quick to fire. We're so quick to rehire. We're so quick to bench and, you know, put in the backup. That is just the way we are as a country. And, you know, it's always been that way. I look down the road right now in Tallahassee. Mike Norvell's got to go, okay? Well, Mike Norvell can't go. They can't afford to let him go. He's there. And he's going to be there for at least two more years. He's going to be there the rest of this year. He's going to be there next year. Urban Meyer, okay, I said it last night, and I feel that way again today. Regardless of the rumors, he's not going to leave this football team. Certainly he's not going to just pack up and leave after one loss. I mean, that is absurd. And I'm surprised that some, you know, more decorated members of the media actually do believe that. And, you know, let's credit Urban Meyer here for putting out the fire. You know, what if he played the role of Jimbo Fisher? How many times in Jimbo Fisher's career did he not say, I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to build this thing at Florida. He didn't. He always went around and said, well, I'm not going to comment about this job because if I have to comment about this job, then I'm going to have to comment about the next job. Wrong, Jimbo. All you had to say was what I just said. But you refused to because we know that indirectly, or perhaps directly, depending on how you look at it, you would hold a 44 Magnum to the Seminole head and say, I want more. Give me more. Okay, I'm going through a divorce now, so I need more because she gets half. Those are Florida laws, and they suck. Well, they do. Nothing we can do about that. But that's what Jimbo did. Not here with Urban Meyer. He put out the fire today. So let it go, all right? It'll come up again. It'll especially come up again if the Jaguars lose games. I don't believe it happens. I think he invested way too much. I think he looked at Shad Khan in the eye and told him what the plan was, which included Trevor Lawrence. I think he brought in people from all across the country. This is the largest staff in the NFL. They have all moved families and now are setting up around the 904. I just don't think he quits on all of those people. So That's it. That's my final statement on it, at least for now. I'm going to let it go, and I'm going to look towards what's next for the Jaguars. And what's next for them is the Denver Broncos. And this is a football team, the last couple of years under Vic Fangio, has been terrible in the month of September. What, 0-3 and 0-4 respectively? They won last week by traveling to New York. They did it really kind of the old school way. First off, defensively, they totally shut down New York's rushing attack. 20 carries, 60 yards. That is all New York was able to muster last week against this, you know, Denver defense of front that Vic Fangio runs. And I know you're smart NFL fans. You understand that this is going to be a completely different look in some instances from what Jacksonville just saw this past weekend in Houston, where Lovie Smith is part of that Tampa 2 tree, started up by Tony Dungy. And you look at all of the defensive coaches who have come out of it. That is Lovie Smith. Lovie didn't show Trevor Lawrence a lot of surprises. And even though he dropped back 51 times, there wasn't a lot of things happening to Trevor Lawrence that was out of the ordinary. As a matter of fact, you go back and watch, I think Trevor does rather well. And it's an impressive game for him as far as his ability to move up in the pocket. To me, that may be the most promising point that happened for the rookie quarterback in his first start. He looked good there. He looked confident there. I'm going to ask Denny Thompson about this. He's our first guest. He's coming up in about 7 or 8 minutes. Listen, Denny knows a lot more about quarterbacks than I do. Maybe he saw things differently. We'll ask. But in my opinion, I thought there was the comfort zone there with him moving up in the pocket. And, you know, the other side of it would be that Houston, many believe, has the weakest secondary in the NFL. That is not going to be the case this weekend in Denver. It's a good defense. Now, they're going to be without Ronald Darby, so they're missing one of their top three corners. Patrick Surtain II out of Alabama is obviously there. And, you know, you also, and I never want to wish injury on anyone. I honestly do feel that way, and I always have. But Bradley Chubb did not play last week for the Broncos against the Giants. He's got a high ankle sprain. I don't think anyone listening would be that disappointed if you find out he is inactive once again. I'm waiting on their official injury report. Obviously, they're behind us. The Jaguars report came out a little bit earlier today. I have not officially seen it yet from Denver. I have a feeling we'll get it probably this hour. So once that comes out, I will share those details with you. But that's how Denver, for the most part, got it done. Okay? Ran the football. Melvin Gordon III, Javonte Williams, pounded it. 28 carries, 165 yards. Jaguars gave up 160 yards last week. Ran the ball effectively. And then Teddy Bridgewater, play action passes, call it what you want, managed a game. His leading receiver, Jerry Jeudy, last week, out. 6 balls, 72 yards. He's got a high ankle sprain. He has been placed on the injured reserve along with Ronald Darby. So two of their starting 22 out at this particular time. Still, Denver a favorite right now, somewhere in the neighborhood of 4.5 to 5 points when you look at the latest as far as the overall handicapping this particular game. We'll start to do that tomorrow night. We'll do it as well on Friday. Yeah, a couple of notes for you as we get ready to take our first break, and then we'll bring in Denny Thompson. Tomorrow, 6 to 8, Mr. Chubby's from Pontevedra. Okay, hope to see you out there. 2-for-1 drafts, 2-for-1 pitchers. That includes Miller Lite, $3 Wells, $3 Wides. Greg Huntington will join me 6:15 to 7. So we'll knock things around with the Mangler. We'll get his opinion on what he saw with the Jags. Also spent a little time with him previewing one of the better games in college football this weekend. Auburn they go to Happy Valley to take on Penn State. So that'll be tomorrow. That is 6 to 8 in Ponte Vedra at Mr. Chubby's. We hope to see you out there. Friday, we're on 3 to 6. All right, it's our Football Friday show. Be on the AM only. Okay, the AM app and on the AM dial. Frank and Company will be on the FM. We're going to do this for about another 7 or 8 weeks until high school is over, and then we will move back to our regularly scheduled time at 6 o'clock. But for about another 8 Fridays, we'll be on 3 to 6 on the AM. Got a lot of guests lined up for Friday. Haven't heard from David Lamb in a little bit. He's going to join us on Friday. Tim Brando will join us on Friday. Got a few other things up my sleeves, as well as certainly R.J. Saunders' sleeves as well. R.J. has been just kicking the living snot out of me with the picks. I got to do some studying. I got to study trends. I got to study weather. I got to study whether or not this is a second consecutive road game as compared to a second consecutive home game. I got to study grass, AstroTurf. I got to study whether it's being played in the afternoon or late at night. I got to put in the work.
You don't have to put in any work. Listen, I'm just selecting based off of feeling, although
I thought you were going to say off of uniforms.
No.
That would have been awesome.
No, but I do need to start following my first mind, because my mind wanted to say take Oregon over Ohio State, and then I said, no, I'm probably going to be wrong. But
yeah, you did do that.
I should have chose Oregon over Ohio State.
Let me think about this now. You came out on these very airwaves. I remember you saying Oregon, and then you switched at the end and said Ohio State. Should I give you a moral victory like all the media did to Florida State a couple of weeks ago when they beat Notre Dame? I mean, I'm going to check the standings right again. Florida State's 1-1 now, right? They beat Notre Dame and lost to Jacksonville State, correct?
No.
I thought the media gave Florida State a moral victory. Doesn't that count in the standings?
Doesn't count in the standings. Count in our hearts. Not the standings.
Let me think about whether or not you should get a moral victory for your Oregon pick. Look at this. We both were awful. I was 3-7. You were 4-6. I mean, you know, we did a six-pack the week of college football. We did 10 last week. So far, I'm 6-up, 10 down. You have a humongous lead. 9-up, 7-down for R.J. Saunders. A 3-game lead as we get ready for our picks coming up on Friday. All right, opening segment brought to you by Lou Bodie of Capital Financial Strategies. Listen, I can't overdo it. It's a free consultation, and your money grows. And I understand your frustration with financial advisors. I've never had a good one in my life. They've always just wanted my signature, and then there was never any feedback. There was never any transparency. It's almost like, yeah, well, you know, we're going to have to charge you here for a load, okay? And you never hear from them again. Not with Lou Bodie, man. It's constant conversation. It's unbelievable. And my money has grown significantly. Why would you not listen to me and make the phone call? Give me one reason why you wouldn't. Call Lou Bodie now. 626-7995. Say you heard Baloo talking about it. What's up? More than 20 years of his practice has been centered on financial planning and education for his clients. This includes strategies on investments and retirement. And again, he's been a senior financial advisor for more than 20 years right here in Jacksonville. Lou Bodie of Capital Financial Strategies. Give him a call. 626-7995. I only have one ex-wife, but I've got like 6 or 7 ex-financial advisors because they suck. Okay? Trust someone that I can trust. His name's Lou Bodie. 626-7995.
Now, the quarterback whisperer, Denny Thompson.
Okay, bring it in.
Wasting your time.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, Denny Thompson is a busy man this time of year, and he's joining us here in studio.
having flashbacks right now. I haven't
with
sat
Rick
in
Ballou.
This seat.
Oh, really?
At night since whenever that was that we stopped doing that, whatever that show was that we used to do here.
Mm-hmm. What was it called again?
The James Coleman Show. No, the Sports Den. But yeah. No, it's good to be here, man.
Good to talk to you.
Yeah, you too. Always fun.
My opinion, and I certainly want yours, you know a heck of a lot more about quarterback play than I do, but I thought with all of the negative things that we witnessed, the pocket presence of Trevor Lawrence in his first NFL start was real good.
I couldn't agree with you more, especially when you look at where it was the first preseason game. His feet were... let's call him non-decisive, and I thought he was late on a couple of things, and we even talked about back then him kind of moving into pressure. I think it goes to show just, you know, how talented the guy is that in a three-week period he can go from what he got away with in college to seeing live reps and saying, I got to change a couple little things. And I thought his pocket presence was excellent, like teaching tape good. For the most part, on Sunday in Houston.
You and I went over the numbers, the projections. I said play over the 12 picks because I want him to take some chances. He did. One of those was absolutely 100% on his own. The other two, I guess, is worthy of a debate. But what did you make out of the fact that it wasn't dinking and dunking and all the intermediate stuff? He threw the football downfield. We haven't seen that for a while here in Jacksonville, and we know that when that happens, mistakes are going to happen, especially for a rookie.
I had no problem with the ball that he threw across his body. That's the league today. Like that, if you watch any game, it doesn't even have to be the elite guys, the Aaron Rodgers, the Patrick Mahomes, all that kind of stuff. It don't have to be them. It can be just about any game. There's big plays, and there's high completion percentages with that. The two interceptions that he threw outside of that, I don't really... I don't know what he was doing, to be honest. Like that, those were a little bit off to me. They weren't really misfires as much as they were just complete misreads. But you're so right. It's refreshing to see the ball travel more than 5 yards in the air and a guy take shots down the field. I said last week with you that I wanted to see them be aggressive. Now, I didn't mean throw it 51 times. That wasn't what I had in mind. But what I did have in mind are the play-action shots they took. I don't like the naked boots they're doing with him. But outside of that, you know, the play-action shots that they took with him and even just, you know, getting vertical as quick as they can, I love to see. And I thought he got rid of the ball fairly quickly for the most part.
You didn't like the naked boots?
I hate them.
Okay. How about him not using his feet? Is that on Trevor? Do you think that was – because I don't know the answer to this question. And we asked Urban today at the press conference, and he answered it, but – It was pretty bland, if you will. Do you think he's been told that's your last ditch effort to run? Is this Trevor on his own trying to make a play by throwing the football? What did you make out of that?
Well, I think 90% of the quarterbacks that play the position should be told it's your last effort to run, right? If it was your first, you should be a running back. So I think that is what factors in into a lot of those decisions. And in practice, you know, a lot of times you have the guys, you know, you're not running, you're throwing this ball in practice. So I think that does play in. But you know what I haven't heard a lot of people talk about that I think is so big for Trevor is the film that he gets from this game.
Mm-hmm.
Of him seeing what that film looks like on Sundays and seeing himself on what he did well, on what he could have done better. And I think a big part of that is recognizing, okay, when do I have a clear path to run? We don't want you running, you know, picking up 2 yards and taking a shot. But if you have a clear path to 8 yards, to 7 yards in a sideline, take it.
Yeah.
Take it. And the only reason why I said that I didn't like the naked boots, I didn't like when they were running them in the second half when it was obvious passing situations. Mm-hmm. You have a guy who can take a 5-step drop and sit back there and spin it if you want to. You don't need to roll him out.
Denny Thompson with us, joins us here each and every Wednesday at 7:15. All right, terrible game plan. Just an awful game plan. And, you know, the numbers say 51 pass attempts, 16 rushing attempts. One of those was Trevor, one was Chenault. He only had a combination of 14, 5 for Robinson, 9 for Carlos Hyde. What happened here, and did they panic too early?
Oh, I think that's exactly it. I hope that wasn't their game plan. Like, if that was their game plan, I think we got bigger problems. I hope they got in there And to be fair to them, they had two good runs early. They got called back for holding penalties.
No doubt.
That put them in passing situations. But again, I think the same thing I thought with Trey. I think they're gonna learn a lot from week one to week two as a staff, both in communication, how you get to play in, because the pace, you were on the sideline, you had to feel this. The pace was miserable.
Yeah.
Like it just wasn't an NFL pace. So I think you're gonna see more of a 50-50 distribution. And I think that was probably the plan coming in, and they did just panic.
You know, listen, everything that could have went wrong did. You had five drops in the first half. You had seven penalties in the first half. You dropped an interception on your very first defensive series, which could have put the team up 7-0. But you were out of training camp, and it looked like there was complete command. At least let's talk offensively here. They were running guys in, running guys out. Do you believe, and I didn't think it was on Trevor. I thought it was on other people. So, you know, people will say now, well, that's because Minshew got all those first-team snaps. Is it that, or is it four-fifths of the offensive line was out with an injury, Jones Jr. and Chark Jr. were out with an injury, or a combination? What is it?
It didn't seem like that because you make a really good point because we were at the majority of the practices. I never would have guessed that would have been the result. There was never anything that would have led.
I remember one with LaVisca Chenault the entire – and I went to every training camp practice.
Yeah, and even like the interceptions, there was one day where there were multiple interceptions. But the discipline part of it and the lining up and the pace of it I thought was excellent in training camp. Never would have thought that. I don't really know what – I have a hard time – I can blame the coaches for the pace. I can blame the coaches for the constant – breaking the huddle at 12 seconds, and you see Trevor saying, "Hey, come on.
Right.
I can't blame the coaches for a guy having three penalties for being too far in the backfield or on the offensive line. I talked to Blake Bortles yesterday.
Okay.
And I asked him, I was like, we were talking about just some other stuff, just, you know, chatting. And I was like, hey, have you ever played in a game where that happened? He's like, no, heck no. He's like, because those guys get warnings before they get flagged.
Mm-hmm.
Like the ref, like, you got to scoot up 74. You got to scoot up 75, whatever it is. To have that happen multiple times, like I don't know how you blame that on a coach. I don't even know what to blame that on.
Yeah, Urban Meyer today, again at the press conference when we were over there, said that he didn't think that they were all penalties. He said no one asked him, but usually coaches, because they're scared to get fined, will never say anything at all.
Yeah.
You know, that goes the other way of a call that was made. But clearly today, he did state that. If we have it, we'll play it for you here coming up in a couple of moments. All right. From all the coaching that you do with quarterbacks, you mentioned film study. Growth between game one and game two. All right. Home crowd. Right now, fans are upset. But, you know, what's great about the NFL is every day that turns here this week, the energy starts to come back. But tomorrow will be it's not college football. Yeah. You know, it's the NFL where by Friday, folks will be amped. By Sunday at 1, they'll be ready to go. I expect a great crowd.
And if they win by Sunday at 5, we will be playoff bound.
It'll be absolutely out of this world. So how much can a quarterback grow from one football game to the second in the NFL?
It's immeasurable. And it's not even like the growth of – you know, it's not mechanics, it's not instincts, it's not any of that. It's more, you know, I should have held this read a little bit longer. Because it's the first time you've run at full speed against somebody else running at full speed. I should have stayed on this first read just another step. Or I should have come off of that read a little. Or, you know, what I think I'm seeing, when I think I'm seeing cover two, it's actually quarters and this is giving it away. And it's all those things that while it's still fresh, Rick, while you can still remember what your thought process was during the play, it's all those things that you can then adjust what that thought process is, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like if it's week 8, you can't remember what you did in week 1 or 2. You have to go back and really think about it. That's the reason why all teams grow so much between week 1 and week 2. It's all fresh, and they all have this image in their mind of what they thought it was going to be, but it wasn't. And so now you can kind of adjust that reality.
All right. Hope that is the case. Here's where it gets real interesting. Lovie Smith runs that Tampa 2 defense. That secondary on paper was probably considered the worst in the NFL.
Yeah.
here comes Denver. Here comes a 3-4 or a variable of it with Vic Fangio. A defensive. There weren't a lot of surprises last week for Trevor Lawrence. There will be this Sunday.
Yeah, I think you have to run. The only way you can stop that is to run the ball well. Is to come out and say, you can't blitz us from every direction because you can't stop the run doing that, right? We have to make you fit the run up into the gaps that you know or that you have to fit it up. So you can't bring this exotic, which means you can't get in third and 9.
Right.
Right? So I still want to see the shots taken, but let's mix in, and I like the aggressive, but let's mix in, you know, some screens. Let's mix in some draws. Let's mix in some things that keep them honest and at least have to make them pause before they just get into a pass set or pin their ears back to rush the passer. It's the only way you're going to have success.
Yeah, you got to run the ball. I don't care who you are. I mean, we saw the 108 passes in that Thursday night game with Prescott and Brady. And we kind of saw the exception of the rule, you know, a couple of nights ago with Derek Carr, who threw it more than 50 times.
Derek Carr is so underrated.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that.
He is, man. He is so underrated. Yeah. I love watching that guy.
He's fun. All right, let's go around here. We got a couple of minutes left with Denny Thompson. Let's begin with Florida. We know that there's a hamstring for Anthony Richardson. He has been practicing. Florida, a sizable home underdog to Alabama. What do you believe the quarterback situation should be for the Gators on Saturday?
I got to be careful with this because I have talked to Anthony a couple times. I don't know what the rotation's going to be. I don't know exactly how he's feeling, but here's what I do know. If 15 is healthy, he's got to take the bulk of the snaps if you want to win this football game. He is showing right now that in most games he's going to be the best player on the field.
Right.
Period.
Mm-hmm.
And Alabama may have numbers 2 through 31.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But if he's your best player and what happened against USF, you have to play him that way. You have to bring the safety down. Like you have to bring another linebacker in or he's going to eat you up at the run. It's very Cam Newton-ish he don't have to start, but he's got to take the majority of the snaps if you're going to have a prayer in this one.
All right, Georgia, Carson Beck, under the impression that he was going to get the go. He did not. What can you say about that, and what's the latest with the dogs at quarterback?
Yeah, let me clarify that because it was on your show that I said it. I was heading back from Atlanta last week, and that information that I got where I said I think Carson is going to start did not come from Carson. Came from someone else inside the program that would know. My understanding is that it was the decision was made, let's play this a little safer. Stetson Bennett's our steady hand here. And it ended up being a good decision for a victory, right? And it ended up being a good decision because Stetson tore it up.
Right.
My complaint as someone who's close to Carson is that you got to develop these guys.
Right.
And Stetson Bennett's gone after this year. And Carson is uber talented. You were going to win that game anyway, you know, so, but that's why Kirby makes $6-7 million a year. And I'm sitting here being a guest on your show, Rick, which I love, but you're not paying me that much. Right. So, I mean, it was the information I had, and I don't know what caused them to do a 180, but my understanding is it came from the top.
Georgia's a 32-point favorite against South Carolina.
South Carolina's bad.
No, they're 32 bad. Points. Let's wrap with my guys in Tallahassee. They're 2-0 this year, two moral victories. Listen, I love the McKenzie Milton story. In my opinion, he can't throw a football.
Right.
That's my opinion. And now, you can call me a disgruntled Knoll or whatever, but he can't make the simple throw.
There's a McKenzie you're talking about.
McKenzie Milton.
So there's a reason why the Florida State staff has been pretty consistent that Jordan Travis would be the guy from the spring until now. Like anytime I've talked to them, it has always been Jordan. I think it's a combination of knowing what McKenzie can and can't do, and it's nothing against McKenzie. I mean, the fact that he's out there is a moral victory.
Right.
In a lot of ways. But the reality is Florida State's not very good. And so you've got to have somebody that can make offense happen when it normally wouldn't happen, and that is not McKenzie Milton. And the thing that you thought was going to be his strength, spraying the ball around, getting the ball out in time, I'm not sure you have the playmakers that even allow that to be effective.
They had some
crucial drops too. I mean, that one by Helton early, you know, should have been 7 points. But yeah, I thought this game really set up well for Travis and, you know, for him to do some things with his legs.
Yep.
And they didn't give him that opportunity. And, you know, there's all sorts of talk out of Tallahassee that he really got after it with the coaches at halftime. And it got real ugly.
Really ugly. If I'm Kenny Dillingham, who's a good friend of mine.
Right.
And I'm Mike Norvell, who I know really well. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Yeah.
Like, it may be disrespectful to do it in front of the teammates, but you know what? About Wednesday, I'm going to bring him in. And we're going to have a heart-to-heart. And I'm going to tell him, don't you ever do that in front of the team again. But I love the fire.
Yeah.
Because that's missing. Like, that is – the old Florida State teams, everybody had that, right? Like everybody wants to be on the field. Everybody wants the ball. Everybody wants to make a play. The Florida State teams of the last couple of years, it seems like nobody wants the ball when it's critical.
No.
Right? And to have that guy walk in and go, this is my damn team. Give me the ball. Get out of my way. You got to like that. Now, I don't know where they stand right now. I don't know where the relationship stands. I honestly think if McKenzie Milton plays, maybe Florida State wins 4 games, 5 games.
Yeah, and I think if that's the case, you got to stop preparing for your future. Neither one of those two quarterbacks are the future. It's kind of like we talked about with Georgia. It's time to see Chubba Purdy. It's time to see Tate Rodemaker and see if either one of these two can be the guy. You hate to sacrifice another year. But come on. They're not responding.
It's not going
to
get worse.
Mm-hmm.
You got to know. Are you going to hit the transfer portal? Like, you need to know that.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you. I mean, I don't think Tate's the answer at all, but I think I'd like to see Chubba.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not planning on bringing back Jordan or you're not planning on him being the guy next year, then what are you?
You remember that game last year when Chubba was like 0 for 9, but there was like 6 drops?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was like one of the most remarkable things I had ever seen.
That's tough. That's tough.
All right, man. Always a lot of fun, Daddy.
Yes, sir.
All right, thank you. Where are you headed next? I think you're all over the place. Where are you headed this weekend?
I'm actually in town this week. I'm thinking about going down to Gainesville.
Yeah.
But my son's got a flag football game.
That's
so
important.
I probably won't go to Gainesville. And it's at 3:30, and I don't want to sweat.
You guys running a wing tee?
He's spent. I don't coach.
Oh, he's. Oh, okay.
No, but okay. It was made perfectly.
You're in the 88th row with the binoculars.
My
just keeping a little bit of an eye on him.
Coach.
Oh, awesome.
And so I told Pastor Stone, mm-hmm. We want him on the team. Like, we're putting this ball in the air now.
Practice him hard.
Yeah, I want to see results now.
There you go. All right, man. Have fun. There he goes. Right. Every Wednesday, we talk with Denny Thompson right here on 1010XL in 92.5 FM. All right, let's get some of your thoughts. 641-1010 on the text line, brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures. Excuse me. Also on Twitter, Blue1010XL. Coming up at 8 o'clock, more on the Jags. We'll talk with John Osher.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, good stuff there from the quarterback whisperer, Denny Thompson. Ground and pound, right? And run the ball. That's what the Jaguars need to do. Changes everything. You can run it, and you can really settle in. So, you know, it's going to be difficult here against a good run defense in Denver. Let me give you the very latest here as far as injuries, both clubs. The Jaguars, a little bit has changed from a week ago. Trey Herndon, I saw him out there today. He was in shells, so he was working, or at least he was out there. But the official report is that he did not practice. So apparently he's gotten, a little bit closer. Lorente McCray has a hamstring. He was limited today. Tyson Campbell with a calf was limited, and Jordan Smith with a knee was limited today. So, you know, that is the latest there as far as the Jaguars are concerned with the injuries. For Denver, Bradley Chubb is the one that I think a lot of people are interested in. He did not play last week against New York with an ankle. All right. He was limited today. Shelby Harris was limited with a wrist. A couple of guys did not go today. Graham Glasgow was ill. And Shamar Stephen with a back. So that is the very latest as far as both teams when it comes to injuries. Real quick, want to get this out for you from Trevor Lawrence this afternoon, because Denny Thompson and I just talked about it, and that is the major issue, the major difference as to what to expect this week defensively. Again, it was a pretty basic Houston defense. Not a lot of surprises. The way that Lovie Smith runs it with his Tampa 2, he says, this is our defense. Go ahead, try to beat us. With Vic Fangio, he's the guy that will scheme week to week based on the opponent. And he's had a tremendous amount of success with this over the years. Today, Trevor Lawrence was asked about just how different it will be facing this Denver defense.
It's a lot different. This is still a big zone team, but more match principles. You know, so they really good athletes that can carry and play man, and their disguises are really good in the back end. And then up front, you know, they got the two linebackers. They're really like DNs, but can drop play coverage. You know, Von Miller, Bradley Chubb. They got a lot of other guys, too, that can roll in. But those two guys on the edge, great pass rush. They make it tough to break contain. So they do such a good job of setting the edge. And then they got the coverage players, too. So they do a good job mixing it up in the secondary, showing you something pre-snap and changing it. So we got a challenge in front of us for sure, but I feel like we had a great first day of prep, and I like our plan so far.
Man, I mean, that just sounded scary. They're a zone team, but they have matchup principles. You know, their guys off the edge also play linebacker, kind of like what you hope happens here with Chase on and Allen. That depending on the situation, whether it's a 3-4 or 4-3, you're able to do multiple things. But showing a lot of different looks before the ball is snapped and then making changes, you know, once the ball is snapped. So really a variety of different things that they can end up doing. And again, Shelby Harris, Bradley Chubb, Shamar Stephen, guys that are involved in that front six and or front seven, depending on how you, or, you know, 3-4-4-3, whether Shamar is involved a little bit. Shamar Stephen, Bradley Chubb did not go last week, and Shelby Harris, we just gave you the very latest on him. So relatively healthy is Jacksonville. That's not the case for Denver. They could certainly be out three starters, possibly four. You have not heard Ronald Darby, a corner, on IR, last year's number one pick. And Jerry Jeudy is not going to be able to give it a go as well. He's got the high ankle sprain. So, you know, that's football. All right, let's grab a few, let's grab some reaction from you. All right, getting a lot on the text line at 641-1010, brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures. I'll scrub a couple of calls. John Osher going to join me here in about 10 minutes. Let's go to Tom, who is next up. Welcome.
Hey, Rick, thanks for putting me on.
Yep.
Let me tell you something. I just went through Urban's college record. He's 187-32. I went through the Jaguars' schedule this year. I'm giving him 3-14, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, put that in. Now, I like what you said about Denver coming in. They got some injuries, but this guy is in professional sports now. Okay?
Yep.
He's going to go. If what? Realistically, what do you think the over-under? Now, I haven't laid any money on it, but I looked at the schedule, and I'm saying, Jiminy Christmas, it could be 3-14, or, you know, we got the 17. Or best case scenario, 6-11. That guy's going to go nuts.
You know, there's been tremendous knee-jerk reaction around here, deservedly so. I mean, it's one thing to lose, but it's how they lost. They didn't do anything right. And, you know, the total had gone from 6 to 6.5. A lot of people were playing over the 6.5, believing they could go 7-10. This year or something along those lines. But you know the way that people react. After what we saw a couple of days ago, people now are like, no way. They'll be lucky to win 2 or 3 games. They need to win a few here early because the middle part of the schedule is brutal, Tom, and these are winnable games, okay? Denver's a winnable game. All right, Arizona, look at what they did last week. Look at that division. The Jaguars have to face every single team in that division. They're going to be an underdog in all four of those games. You know, you go on a Thursday night to take on Cincinnati, a nationally televised game. You know, they're going to be amped up for it. So this isn't going to be easy, but things change all the time in this league, you know, based on who's healthy and who's not.
No, but you're right. That Thursday night game's on the 30th, and I'm going to tell you something. Urban is going to be spotlighted, and the national media the next day, if they lose, let me tell you something, that'll be a tidal wave on top of him. And 187-32. He could lose half the games he ever lost in his total college career. I'll tell you, Jacksonville Jaguars is one of the most interesting stories this year. I love the kid, Trevor Lawrence. Everybody would love him to have him as a son, not even a football player. He's so composed. So, hey, I'm going to keep listening. I might check in. I'm a fan up here. I got the Bills. I'm dealing with the Bills, the Giants, and the Jets. What a clown show.
All right. Good talking to you, Tom. All right. Thank you very much. You know, just to follow up on what Tom said, Urban Meyer today was, you know, asked about the media. There's a lot of people out there have an agenda with Urban Meyer. No one had an agenda with Gus Bradley. No one had an agenda with Doug Marrone, except for members of the Buffalo News and that whole debacle that went on there. Some people in Buffalo, obviously, when Marrone left. But you understand where I'm going here. No one had an agenda with Mike Mularkey. No one had an agenda with Jack Del Rio. People have an agenda here with Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer is polarizing. Well, he was asked about the media today.
I learned about 6 years ago when I read something that was the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. I said, I'm good. I'm done. I'll never read again. So Amy helps me with that. She sends me just the positive stuff. It's been kind of small, but.
What is every article I read?
What was it you read?
You have to ask Amy. I don't read. No, I can promise you I don't read this narrative and I don't read the silliness about our players or about. And she knows that. She's just. Hey, did you hear? And I'm like, oh, is that right?
Okay, so there's body language experts out there reading everything that you're, every time you're on camera, and they're like, he looks defeated. He looks like his heart's not in it, this, that, and the other. I mean, like, can you?
I'd rather just talk about the game, if that's right.
Okay.
All right, so they have it a little bit earlier today. I mean, body language? If things aren't going well, don't you want your coach to look like he's upset? Do you think it's going to have a glaring effect on your team where they're going to look at the coach and say, oh, my God, he's upset. That means I'm no longer going to play well. I don't know. I mean, who gets more upset than Nick Saban? He's a pretty good coach. Who gets more upset than Bill Belichick? He's a pretty good coach. I watched two fiery guys two nights ago in a John Harbaugh, John Gruden matchup. I don't know. I mean, do they want him to be like Tom Landry? I'm just asking. His body language shows that they're not doing what he expects them to do. I don't know why you would expect anything differently. Look at Tom Coughlin's body language, good or bad. Look at Bill Parcells. I mean, Tony Dungy kind of had the cool, you know, I'm not going to overdo it. Maybe there is some truth to that. I don't know. Everyone coaches differently. NBA coaches, Major League Baseball managers, they all do it differently. But, yeah, I mean, I think the media right now has an agenda. And in a way, I think it's kind of cool. Because Jacksonville's being mentioned again, even if there is a little bit of the evil empire in on it, where people are piling up and what I mean by an agenda is they want to see Urban Meyer fail. Okay, there's a lot of people out there that are supposed to be honest and objective, even though that part of journalism has gone long ago. They want to see this man fail. And I think that's all part of it. All right, hour number two is coming up. More of your phone calls this hour, but we're going to begin with John Osher, senior writer from Jaguars.com. He joins Rick Ballew next. We go into the night.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, Wednesday night, 8 o'clock. You know what that means. Time for John Osher, senior writer, Jaguars.com. He goes Into the Night with Rick Ballew. Johnny O, good to have you with us.
Rick, how are you, buddy?
Doing well. I noticed it was hot out there today. As you know, a little bit hotter than I think it had been the last couple of days. And, you know, it really begs the question, you think of the Jags, you think of the Heat, but the last three games that they've played have been indoors.
Yeah, that's right. I hadn't thought about it until you mentioned it, but it has been. I've never been one who really thinks that it's that big of an advantage. Beyond, like, if the teams are equal and one of them is used to heat, the other one's not,
mm-hmm.
then I think it makes a difference. If, you know, when the Jaguars were really struggling in a lot of years, a lot of teams came in here and beat them in the heat.
Right,
they were better than the Jaguars. So, I think it made a difference in New England a couple of years ago. Against that team, the Jaguars were playing pretty well.
No doubt.
But, I'll tell you, Rick, after Sunday, they got bigger issues than the Heat.
I'm just trying to you play the role of the spin doctor here
sure.
a little bit. And I'm thinking of three straight indoors. I'm also thinking about Denver, where they're smelling all that sensimilia and all that good stuff in the stands in Denver. That won't be the case here at the bank on Sunday.
Yeah, well, I have no idea what sensimilia smells like, but I'll take your word for it. If the Jaguars play well, then I think Heat comes into play. So beyond that, I don't think you'll smell much of that. Whatever it smells like, I don't think you'll smell much of it at the bank on Sunday.
All right, here we go. What's great about having you on Wednesday, John, is that, we've already, you and I both have been able to time and again talk about what went wrong Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. So we get to turn the page here, at least somewhat. To me, though, the one thing I've had trouble believing is, boy, there were no signs in training camp. There weren't signs in the three preseason games that this team would be so disorganized in their first regular season matchup. Have you been able to put a finger on that?
Not really. The only thing you can think, a couple of things. These are all just you wonder if. Were they doing something formationally that was sort of a little bit borderline? And maybe the official was calling it a certain way that they weren't expecting. Maybe, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I doubt it. But, maybe they were, okay, this guy's going to be a stickler for one thing, and they were just doing something different. I don't think that's what it was. I think they were lining up wrong. The miscommunication, the slowness in from the sidelines, which has been talked about a little bit, the one thing that comes to mind is, you don't run as much in preseason as regular season. So if they're putting in packages, formation groups, or personnel grouping that they weren't using in preseason, then this is the first time they've done it. But I sort of, I fall more in line with what Urban Meyer said today, which is, the mistakes they were making Sunday were preseason week one stuff. I'm paraphrasing, but that was the gist. You've had four games. You should be beyond any of that by now. I've been saying all week, Rick, I don't know how good or bad the Jaguars really are, because I felt like they played their way out of that game so fast.
Yeah.
Meaning you had seven penalties, nine called in the first half. So you're second and 15 every series.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you're that, I don't know what Trevor Lawrence is when he's in good situations. I don't know how they run the ball, because they never had a chance to, because of all that. So the big message I've been saying all week is, give yourself a chance to see how good you are.
Yeah.
Don't play your way out of the game, because they wouldn't have beaten anybody doing that the other day.
Well, you know, around here, they were so vanilla offensively in the first two preseason games. And, you know, the complaints came in about what's going on with this team. I mean, they had one field goal in the first two games combined with that first team. And then all of a sudden, you know, game three, Dallas, they open things up a little bit and the chatter calms down. But, and you alluded to this, I try to follow as intently as I can, but it appeared to me that they had some new formations, that the scheme had changed a little bit. And I'm not an excuse maker, but when four fifth-year offensive line is out, Jones Jr. is out, Chark Jr. is out, and you got a rookie quarterback, how much of that attributes to the fact that they did what they did?
Yeah, the fact that they didn't play a whole lot during the regular season. I think that's a fair thing to think contributed to it. I also think from a fan's point of view, it's fair to say, well, look, guys, it's still a game you've been playing all your life. Get lined up. And I think, you know, my guess is the coaching staff thinking the same thing this week.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if we can say all we want about Nunes, some of these things were basic football stuff.
Yeah. All right,
how
let's
you get lined up. You know,
yeah.
And then the holding, you know, four holes, two of them I thought were questionable, but two of them I thought were pretty obvious. And whatever it is, your technique's got to be such that you're not getting red flagged for holding.
What we do know is this. They're not a good enough team where you can make mistakes. And also, when called upon, you got to make plays. I mean, whether it's Shaq Griffin with the pick or it's the six drops that happened, including Chark, you know, fairly early on, this team has to make big plays. And if they don't, they're going to continue to lose.
Well, big plays are key moments. And if you think about it, number of plays, and I'm just speaking to your point, where it was there to be made without really a superhuman effort, meaning you had a chance at the interception that turned into a big play by Brandon Cook. Two sacks that Caleb on Chason didn't close. The pick by Shaquille Griffin. And then five or six drops by the wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's 10 plays. You know, and many of which would have been either first down, turnovers. You know, again, fans hate hearing if. And I'm not even saying an if.
Right.
I'm just saying if you have 10 plays a game that you look at and there's a player saying, man, I should have made that one.
Yeah.
Well, this is the NFL. You're in the league to make those plays. And if you're not making them, then you're not doing your job. And I think, you know, I said on Jaguars.com this week somewhere, they need to get better by doing very simple things better, but that's not always easy. You know, doing these things, you know, but you got to do them. And it's not as easy to get better fundamentally as people think, but that's the task this week. You have got to give yourself a chance to win by doing things in the moment that you're supposed to be doing.
John Osher, our guest, Final Moments with John. You can read everything. Just go to Jaguars.com. He is their senior writer. All right, Vic Fangio, you know, does a variety of different things here defensively, the exact opposite of what the Jags saw last week with Lovie Smith. But you know as well as I, if they can run the football, it changes everything. And, you know, 51 passing attempts, 16 rushing attempts this past Sunday. I want to see this offensive line not make any mistakes and see if the Jaguars are able to run the football. If so, it changes the entire complexion of the contest.
Well, I think what you said is exactly right. And, you know, now make the mistake. I don't believe for a minute they planned to go into that game the other day 16-51.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get behind and you spend the first quarter at first and 15 and up, you're going to have 16 runs. I mean, if they play the way they did Sunday, the way they did last Sunday, the Broncos will be up 28-0.
Right.
And the reason I say that is this. This is a team that if they know you're throwing and they know you have to throw, Von Miller and Chubb, whoever's rushing the passer, is going to get to you, or you're going to make mistakes into the heat, into the teeth of a very confusing defense. You've got to get up, and if you can get up, then I think you can do what you're talking about, Rick. I think you can then run. But, you know, it all goes back. I said at the beginning of the week I was going to be a broken record, because if you don't make the mistakes you made, this team was running the ball the other day. It was just, you'd have a 10-yard gain and then a 10-yard loss because of the hole.
Oh, yeah.
Again, give yourself a chance. I think they can run. They can run block. I think they can do it against Denver. And you're right. They have to beat this team. If James Robinson runs for 80 to 100 yards, I think they win and Trevor has a really good game. If he runs for 40, I think Trevor throws two or three picks because he'll be throwing into third and 10 into a confusing defense and he'll make rookie mistakes.
They did a real nice job, went back and watched them against New York. They did a really nice job of shutting down the run and you know, forcing Daniel Jones into second and very long, third and you know, down in distance, third and long, was against the New York Giants the entire game. Vic Fangio's defense was able to do that.
Yeah, and that's what Vic does. I mean, I worked with him for 1 year in Indy really early on, way back, and I followed his career a little bit. Obviously, that's what he does. He's good at disguising coverages, disguising looks. That is a completely different thing than the Texans did. So it's confusing in a different way. Trevor talked about it today. So they know what's coming. There's no secret about Vic Fangio. But the thing is, if you're in second and 12 against Von Miller, you can know what's coming all you want. One out of three or four plays, he's going to beat you because he's that good.
Yeah, he's unbelievable.
So you've got to keep him not off the field, but you've got to keep him in third and three where he's not playing the pass and he's not pinning his ears back.
Yeah. I mean, Von Miller this week and Chandler Jones next week. And Trevor Lawrence's description of Vic Fangio today was outstanding in a way, but it was also very scary.
Yeah, because that's what, you know, against a rookie quarterback, guys like this thrive because they confuse him.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Rick, none of Trevor's interceptions the other day concerned me in the least. They were textbook what young kids do.
Right.
They don't see the dropping corner with the Hargraves play. They throw back across the middle, and then they don't see the dropping linebacker. I mean, those things were going to happen against cover two. Sometime this year, they all happen. I doubt he does it again. But there's a litany of the same kind of thing against this kind of defense. Again, running and staying in situations where you want to throw and not vice versa, that's everything this week, and it means playing fundamentally sound.
Well, you run the ball, it changes everything. And just to wrap things up, when it comes here to Trevor, yes, he made some mistakes, but I was happy that he was throwing the football downfield. We haven't seen that around here in forever, and he did. He also handled himself like a true professional, like a grizzled veteran after the game by coming out and you know, saying what he did, how he made these particular mistakes. And I thought his pocket presence, 51 dropbacks, man, he looked real confident in the pocket to me. And, you know, I think those are all really good signs considering it's only been one start.
He's going to be so good. And for the reasons that you're saying, right? The thing I noticed, yes, pocket presence, the eyes never left the receivers downfield. And I get that everybody today, Urban was talking about him running, Trevor was talking about him running. To me, the best thing I saw the other day was the fact that he wasn't taking off and running. Every young quarterback takes off and runs, especially if you have the ability, because it's a short-term game. Hey, I can get this 5 yards. This kid, even under pressure, is looking downfield. That's the one thing with a great quarterback that I've never seen it taught. Either the guy has it or he doesn't. If you've got it, you're going to be great, especially with his tools. I hadn't seen him under pressure like that, right? You saw him the other day.
Wow.
You know, I mean, the Clemson, he never was.
Yeah.
This is against an NFL defense
right.
With pressure. His eyes are downfield. That's everything. To me, I think he's going to, I mean, I have more confidence in him now than I did before the game.
Well, you know, I'm a prognosticator, and I'll tell you this, that if, despite the 51 dropbacks, if Gardner Minshew was the quarterback, he would have had 30 carries.
Well, 30 carries, yeah. And all you would need to do is go back, and I'm not trying to hammer on Gardner. You're exactly right. Go back and watch Gardner when he dropped and the game was out of hand. He's running around quick. The eyes are down. Is this what he was?
Right.
Trevor, polar opposite, and I'm telling you, people around the league will tell you, when you see that from a young guy, it's rare to see that. I knew he had the physical tools. I didn't know if he had that.
Great stuff, Johnny. Always a lot of fun. See you down there the rest of the week.
Look forward to it, buddy.
There he goes. John Osher, senior writer, Jaguars.com. Yeah, the ratio was 51 passes by Lawrence, 16 rushes, only 14 by the Jaguars running backs, which is scary. All right, 5 for Robinson, 9 for Hyde. But if it had been Gardner Minshew, these numbers would have changed to 21 and 46. The Jaguars would have passed it only 21 times, and Minshew would have been, 14 for 21, an average of 4.5 per. And he would have ran it 30 times, because that's the difference. Gardner Minshew tucked and ran, always out of the pocket. This man, okay, the generational talent, the future of this franchise, stayed in the pocket. I think there is a tremendous amount of overreaction right now. Settle down, people. It's been one start for him, and he showed some encouraging things. Complete professionalism. Think of Blaine Gabbert when he was a rookie. Think of Byron Leftwich when he was a rookie. Think of Blake Bortles when he was a rookie. Okay? And, Blaine, I really don't know too much about. I never really had a feel for him. Obviously, he's in Tampa Bay now. Really like David Garrard personally. Really like Blake Bortles personally. But look at the maturation of Trevor Lawrence. When you saw him in there, he didn't look like a rookie. Yet the ownership, I think, is real, real good. You need to hang your hat on to a couple of things right now. Why don't you begin with that, with Denver coming into town this weekend. All right, your reaction, 641-1010 on the text line. You can also get me on Twitter. That's Ballou, B-A-L-L-O-U, 1010XL.
Go into the night with Rick Ballou on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Richard, what are you doing? Rest in peace, the great Rick Wright on keyboards with Pink Floyd. Let's see here. He died in 2008. Wow. I didn't think it was that long ago. At the age of 65 from Hatch End, Middlesex. Of course, one of the founding fathers of Pink Floyd, with Roger Waters, Syd Barrett, and drummer Nick Mason. Syd's been gone for a long, long time. Combination of LSD, other assorted drugs, and I bet you some serious mental health issues. Matter of fact, I know, because I read all about it with Syd Barrett. And, of course, he was replaced by David Gilmour. A lot of people thought that Gilmour was one of the original members of Pink Floyd. He was not. Of course, Gilmour now doesn't talk with Waters, and who loses out on it? Us. Your grudge. It happens with bands all over the place. But the music will live forever. I just wish they would, wish we could see him tour. Right before COVID came, I was supposed to see Roger Waters down in Miami. Matter of fact, I don't even know if I've been refunded for that type of stuff. I probably should check, huh?
Probably should check, because I don't know if they'll, if, you know, since he's passed, I don't know if they'll do what a lot of other places are doing by honoring the ticket, even though they are now pushing it back to later dates. There are some concerts and comedy specials that say, hey, if you purchased the ticket, let's say last January, and we're having the show next week, you know, here, September 2021, we'll honor that ticket and give it to you.
I think it was supposed to be a year ago, 2020, in August, if I remember correctly. There would have been some cannabis there that people would have smelled. What does smoking toad smell like? Have we been able to figure that one out yet? Because I know a lot of people ask me all the time here on this show. It's been kind of the identity when it comes to smoking toad, but I don't know what it smells like.
Why do I feel like it's odorless?
I think you may. I think you may be onto something there.
Yeah.
Why do I feel you like can it's be odorless? Indoors? You can go to the laboratory, sneak one off, maybe perhaps on an airplane.
Watch out! They're going to start making different flavors. I tell you.
Right, like peppermint toad,
blue raspberry.
How about cinnamon toad?
That'd be an interesting smell.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're gonna start making different flavors once they can figure out can this be recreational? Because it seems to me that, you know, this is something you have to do behind closed doors with almost kind of like a guru almost. It doesn't seem like anybody just said, hey, some of my friend gave this to me and said, here, try this.
You know, I hate to be the bearer of bad truth, but my GF told me about this just yesterday. Apparently, they've been lacing street marijuana with a lot of different chemicals and drugs, and the result of that is that people are dying.
Yeah.
Is it fentanyl?
Like K2.
What, I mean?
Fentanyl, stuff like that.
See, that, I don't get that. I don't understand that. I mean, it used to be one thing if you were that hardcore and you were, you know, doing smack or speedballs or, you know, stuff like that, there's always the risk that something bad could happen to you. It could end up in death. All right, I'll never forget being in the foxhole in my first summer back from Florida State when my buddy pulls up in the backhoe and says, Len Bias just died, cocaine. And that was during the heyday of cocaine, mid-80s. And, man, that was a culture shock for so many different people. You know, there was two things that I remember from the 80s. That right there, Len Bias died of cocaine in Boston right after the Celtics won a world championship. I mean, the world stopped moving for a few seconds. The other one was when Magic Johnson got AIDS. I remember I was sitting in the Seminole Barbershop in Tallahassee when a kid walks in and announces it to everyone. I mean, those are two things I'll never forget for the rest of my life. But you knew that drugs like that were dangerous. I mean, smoking leaves was never, ever considered being that dangerous. You get stupid, you get munchies, you'd laugh. But now it's being laced with stuff? You got to be kidding me.
Yeah, everybody, I mean, you know, just be careful, because you never know what individuals are trying to do here with certain, you know, recreational drugs. You know, I don't have a problem with anybody partaking in smoking weed. I don't have that issue. But, you know, I do fear that sometimes, you know, you do have those who either you buy from or you know a friend who you go over to their house and do it. You know, you just make sure that you're careful, because they are doing stuff like this. And what you think is going to be, you know, hey, we do this every Thursday, could be, you know, your last time. And exactly. I mean, think of Len Bias. I mean, here's a guy that, I mean, there were some people saying, you know, whose league was it going to be, his or Jordan's?
Yeah. Larry Bird was going to report to a rookie minicamp.
Yeah, Bird said in an interview
he
that
just
I
won
heard,
his third ring.
He had said with the way his back was going, he said that he was going to kind of quietly leave and it was going to be Lynn's team. That, I mean, that's what he had said. He said, if Lynn hadn't died, I probably would have left a lot earlier than I did.
That fentanyl is dangerous. I believe that is what is used when you have a colonoscopy. And I want to say this with all due respect, because I'm not trying to be a smart ass about this. But those 10 seconds before I passed out was maybe the most incredible 10 seconds of my life. And I can understand why Prince died of it, Tom Petty died of it, Michael Jackson died of it, so many other people died of it. The feeling was, I can't even explain it to you. And I've never been a drug user, despite what you may think. I'm a pretty basic guy. I just like to drink Miller Lights and a little bit of Irish whiskey. And I love a big fatty. That's a Cuban cigar. I'm kidding. But that stuff right there, and I remember one of the guys in there knew who I was, and he's like, during that 10 seconds, he says to me, okay, he's asleep. We can cut. We can go in. And I was like, what? And then I was gone. And then you wake up. You feel like you wake up like literally like a minute later. And like, we're all done. But so I didn't understand why people would want. But I just can't imagine. I mean, say you were driving and you were smoking that. In my opinion, based on what happened to me, you'd be driving and you'd pass out in a matter of seconds. Now, I don't know how much is in there compared to what the dose that I got. But, man, you got to be careful. These kids now, some of them are getting this stuff. You know, would marijuana, and I would think that for the most part, marijuana nowadays is, you know, everyone's got a friend with a medical card. You know, maybe that's what it's coming down to now. Maybe that's what parents are going to have to say to their kids. We don't want you smoking, but if you do, please get the right stuff from so-and-so who's got a medical card. Don't buy it off the street because people are dying from freaking marijuana.
Yeah, it may have to be the safer route now than it used to be. Yeah, you always feared, you know, well, who are you getting it from? Do you know that person? Could that person be setting you up, you know, things of that nature. Now, I mean, with you having dispensaries and stores that are able to sell it, that may have to be the safer route. And also, I mean, you know, you can also now educate yourself, you know, on the subject as well. See what you want to do as far as that goes. You know, I'm straight edge, so I don't drink, I don't smoke. But, you know, I don't drink,
don't smoke. What do you do?
Yeah, I mean, you know.
What's that? Who sang that song? Adam Ant!
Oh.
Did Baloo just pull Adam Ant out? Anyway, continue on.
Yeah, I'm just saying. Like, I have friends that do it. I don't have an issue with it. But, you know, I always just ask for them to also be careful. I don't want to get that phone call or that text or see that message on social media that, hey, such and such passed away from blank. And then it's like, my gosh, man. So, just be careful, guys, if you're going to do it. You know, I don't make heads or tails of it.
Always been a big fan of the secondhand smoke. Remember the first time I smelt it was in a bathroom at Fenway Park. I'm like, Daddy, what is that? He's like, nothing, son. How about a hot dog? How about a Fenway Frank? How about a Coke? I'm like, no, can we have some of that? What's that? That smells good. Can we get some?
Smells kind of strong.
All right, we'll grab some calls on the other side. We go tonight till 9 is tonight Compton & Company. Compton & Company coming up at 9 o'clock.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, for what it's worth, I need to ask Urban Meyer today if this would be the week for Duke Johnson and or Jacob Hollister. And he said he would know more today after practice. Duke Johnson, 307 career receptions. I think he'd be a nice addition to this team on third down. A couple of drops by Robinson. And obviously, they got to run the football if they have any chance of knocking off Denver on Sunday. All right, let's grab some calls. 641-1010, same number. You can get us on the text line, 641-1010. Let's go to Omar. How you doing, sir? Omar, are you there? Yeah, Omar, are you there? Omar's in three.
Hey, whoa.
I
had you on mute.
I gave you three, and I was about ready to go 2-1, and you. All right, what's up?
Thanks for having me on your show. I love the show, and thanks for the community service announcement earlier on the THC factor. That's huge. I want to chime in on the Jags. I think the Jags beat themselves this weekend. Looking, I believe these guys believe that they could win this game, and I think they almost. I believe they looked past the Texans, thinking they weren't going to have a losing season this year. It was like a domino effect across the board. This entire team put on a clinic for looking past a team. And I listened to some of the DBs in preseason and during the preseason games, and these teams, the player was talking like he really – believed in what was going on in the locker room, what was going on with this quarterback. I think the whole team's bought in. And Urban Meyer not sweating all the negative talk. I mean, he put the players in position to make plays. I mean, think about it. How many run plays were called back? We didn't have 15 runs. We had like 21, 22 runs. And, I mean, if you put that quarterback in position where he's like first and 10 as opposed to third and 15 – it's a whole other story if these guys are executing what Urban's putting on the present.
Good stuff, Omar. Appreciate it. I don't agree with that they were overlooking Houston. There's no way. You can't overlook anyone in this league, especially when you're an organization that was on a 15-game losing streak. However, for Urban Meyer and his staff, it's one game. It's not 15. Yeah, a couple of guys carried over from the Doug Marrone regime, and certainly some of the players did. And they'll all tell you that, you know, they were able to turn the page. But I don't believe that at all. I mean, Houston had won 6 in a row. Houston had won 12 of 14. Houston had won 17 of 21 in this rivalry. And, of course, those numbers now are all increased by one. You know, I would just say this with Urban Meyer, because I kind of blew it out early about the fact that he stated that there's no chance that he will go to Southern Cal, and I guess I'm a hypocrite here because I said I would let it go, but I just want to make one other point on this, and it's amazing to me that it's getting this type of play. But right now, let me find it for you. At this moment in Las Vegas, okay, Urban Meyer is the third highest as far as percentage NFL coach to get fired. He's coached one game. I mean, outside of Bill Belichick and Bruce Arians and Andy Reid, wouldn't Urban Meyer be right there as absolutely untouchable? He's coached one game. Look at these numbers. This is from betonline.com. Matt, and I guess this, I don't know why I describe it that way. I guess maybe I thought I was going to go the route of USC with him leaving. That this is not him leaving. This is him being fired. So I'll stay true to my no more talk about Southern Cal. Matt Nagy, 4-1. Mike Zimmer, 17-4. Okay, both those coaches lost this week. Urban Meyer is third. 9-2 odds that he will be the first head coach fired this year in the NFL. What do we have, 7 new coaches this year? That's the norm. And we go through 6 or 7 coaches. If I was just to give this the naked eye, I would say, yeah, that's probably it for Matt Nagy this year in Chicago. Yeah, it's probably it for Mike Zimmer this year in Minnesota. Wouldn't be shocked if it's over for Zach Taylor in Cincinnati. Wouldn't be shocked if it's over for Cliff Kingsbury in Arizona, because, you know, they're in, I think, the best division in football. Yeah, after, I only watched one of those Hard Knocks episodes because I just couldn't deal with it anymore, but it feels like there's a lot of grumbling in year two for Mike McCarthy. So let's keep an eye on him. Mike Vrabel, I would say no way. Tennessee has been above par for the last couple of years. But, you know, after a game one meltdown, calling out Julio Jones is probably not the best thing to do as far as your overall job security. I think you can make the case that with a player of that magnitude, you're better off doing that one-on-one. I don't know. Anyone else? You think anyone else, RJ? If you just look at it here on the surface and say, that's it, they're not coming back. I mean, you would think that the seven brand new coaches aren't going to go anywhere. Although we did see it going back a couple of years ago where Freddie Kitchens was one and done in Cleveland. You know who else may be on that list? It's Vic Fangio. Jacksonville wins on Sunday. Denver doesn't have a winning season. So, yeah, I mean, when you see it at the end of the year, and I don't want to talk about the end of the year now because it's, you know, week two. We begin week two tomorrow night in the NFL. But typically there are 6 to 7 coaching turnovers. Tomorrow night it's New York and Washington. I mean, speaking of which, I mean, Joe Judge. He's got to win, right? We heard all the promising things about Joe Judge. Ron Rivera had a nice run in Carolina. Now he's trying to turn those fortunes around in the District of Columbia. Can you think of one for me?
I've definitely thought of, as you've already stated, McCarthy in Dallas. I think we named him. I just haven't understood why. There's individuals that would want to put Kingsbury in the mix as a guy that's on the hot seat. I think he's starting to get the pieces around him. I mean, Harbaugh's. I don't think Harbaugh's ever going to lose his job. I think he's probably a lifer in Baltimore. So I don't know if any coach is going to get let go. I feel like it's going to be a coach to where you say the era is over. We've seen it, and now it's time for us to move on. I mean, let's just say for the sake of argument, if things didn't work out, quote unquote, in Tennessee, do people start looking at Vrabel and saying, hey, we saw it. This was kind of the era. This is how it worked out. Now it's time for us to make a change. I mean, those are kind of the coaches that I'm looking at now, to where you say, who's a team that's been on the cusp, and now you look at the coach and you say, you know what, that just may have been his era, and now we need to find, you know, something different. Maybe another coach can come in and fix things.
Yeah, I think that Cliff Kingsbury, I think Mike Vrabel's a real good coach. I think he made a mistake there with what he said. I wouldn't be shocked if one day he's the head coach of the New England Patriots. At all. Let's see. Cliff Kingsbury here is 13-18-1. All right. So, you know, this guy went 35-40 at Tech. Fired. Not a lot of guys get fired from Georgia, from Texas Tech and end up with a National Football League job. Cliff Kingsbury did. 13-18-1. I think it's the most difficult division in the NFL. The other part of this whole equation is how much is enough for Mike Tomlin, Pete Carroll, Andy Reid, Bill Belichick, John Harbaugh. I mean, very successful coaches. I have to believe those are the five longest tenured coaches in the National Football League. I don't think I left anyone out. And then you just, you know, you look at Sean Payton. Sean Payton, I need to put on that list. Yep, absolutely. You know, John Gruden's in what, year four of a 10-year deal? I don't think you can fire him, and I don't even know, does he have more say than Mike Mayock right now with the owner, Mark Davis? I don't know, but it's fascinating, man. I love looking at this. the NFL is, in my opinion, is totally different from college football. Where in college football, you have to allow there to, in my opinion, unless it's just a disaster, like the good folks over in Tallahassee, okay, you need to bring in yours. You need to bring in your recruiting classes. The NFL, the leash isn't as long because the league is built that way with the salary cap, the draft, hell, even waiver claims to a far lesser extent to, you know, take teams and who are real bad and make them good. I mean, what was the number? 16 times in the last 18 years, a team that finished last in their division finished first the very next year. 16 times in 18 years. That's the NFL. We are out of here. Join us tomorrow night at Mr. Chubby's, Pontevedra, 6 to 8. Greg Huntington will join me in the first hour. For RJ Saunders, I am Rick Ballew. Tomorrow, 6 to 8, Mr. Chubby's, Pontevedra. Coming up right now, Compton and Company.